This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about pet care today, and first up, we'll look at pet insurance. Joining us is Woody Mawinney. He is co-founder and CEO of Policy, that's Pawlicy Advisor, an online pet insurance marketplace. And Woody is a nationally licensed insurance producer. What are your questions about pet insurance? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Woody. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. What a great idea this is. I have had pets, lots of pets, and trying to get them insurance is kind of a confused, scary thing. What caused you to make this company up?
Well, when I adopted my first dog, I went to the vet, and my vet actually recommended pet insurance. And like most pet owners, I trust my veterinarian with my pet's life. And, you know, I view them as the trustworthy stakeholder in navigating my pet's health over time. And when my veterinarian recommended pet insurance, I asked, well, who do you recommend specifically? And I didn't get a very clear answer besides Google it. And when my pet ultimately came down with an illness that costs quite a bit of money to routinely care for, it got me thinking long and hard about what I had chosen, whether it protected my pet's unique health risks, and ultimately whether I was saving money over time. So I realized the value of pet insurance very quickly in my pet owner journey. And ultimately, you know, I set out on a mission to make it as easy as possible for other pet owners to navigate what can be a fairly confusing topic.
Yes, and it's relatively new kind of insurance, so it has been evolving over time, hasn't it?
It has. You know, just 10 years ago, there were only a handful of providers, and now in the U.S., there are well over 30. So there are plenty of great options for pet owners, but with more options, sometimes comes more confusion with all of the different variables at play.
It definitely does. So let's talk about what your website does. What does Policy Advisor do for people who are confused? Tell us about that.
Yeah, the simplest way to think about Policy Advisor is a Priceline or Expedia for pet insurance. We don't offer our own pet insurance. We help pet owners navigate all of the fabulous options on the market to hopefully do two things really well. The first is to match a coverage option to your pet's unique health risks. Each pet is different. Each breed comes down with different health conditions. And we want to make sure you're taken care of not only today, but in the future for all of those hopefully unlikely occurrences. And then from a pricing standpoint, making sure that you save the most money over time. You know, I think one of the topics that's commonly overlooked in pet insurance navigation is the cost of pet insurance and how that changes as your pet health risks go up over time. And prices can go up anywhere from 10 to 20% annually, depending on the pet insurance product. So it's really important to find a plan that's going to work for you today, but also in the future. And, you know, through our analysis, we found that we can save pet owners quite a bit of money by thinking about it that way.
Okay. So why is it that only 3% of U.S. pet owners have pet insurance? Is it because of the confusion?
So I think pet insurance hasn't been around that long in the U.S., truthfully, and some of the first products that came onto the market were actually quite confusing. They had limits for just about every nuanced condition your pet can come down with. And now the products have become much more consumer friendly. And I think pet owners, pet parents are really starting to circle back to the product, and veterinarians are becoming equipped with resources such as Policy Advisor to help their clients navigate the space. So originally, I would say it was an awareness problem as well as sort of a confusion problem. You know, what do I choose and why? And today it's becoming much, much more common. And with resources that veterinarians can harness to help, you know, ultimately pet owners find the right product.
So if you looked at it a few years ago, you should probably look at it again because it might be a little simpler. Explain the procedure on your website. It's like three steps, right?
It's very quick. You can go to policy.com, that's Pawlicy.com, and you can enter a few pieces of information about your pet. Think pet breed, age, your zip code, which ties into the veterinary costs in your area. And ultimately, you know, in a matter of moments, you can find different options that are available to you, as well as unique tips, you know, for your, you know, personalized use case for insurance, what your breed could come down with to ultimately find a plan that will save you money and provide the best coverage. And you can check out directly on the site or be rerouted to an insurance company's site for the billing.
Excellent. So what is the best time for pet owners to get that pet insurance?
I like to recommend when your pet is healthy. A lot of people think about pet insurance when it's a little late, when their pet comes down with a condition. And, you know, one of the more common sort of gotcha moments in any sort of insurance product is, you know, when you have a pre-existing condition. And ultimately, you know, if you wait for your pet to come down with a condition, there's a chance that, you know, not only will that not be covered then and there at the time of the emergency, but future conditions related to that prior emergency or condition won't be covered. So, you know, most frequently pet insurance is purchased within 6 months of adoption. And, you know, we like to recommend pet owners go to the vet or, you know, come directly from the vet, ultimately get that statement of good health and that track record that's documented in the medical notes, saying that your pet is healthy, because that will serve as a great benchmark for future coverage. So, you know, most commonly when your pet is young.
Okay. Do you have a question about pet insurance? Do you have insurance? Not sure what it's covered. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So what's the range of cost for pet insurance? An average, obviously.
The national average cost for dogs is approximately $580 last year on an annual basis. That's just under $50 a month. And for cats, it's quite a bit cheaper at around $380 or so annually. And the majority of pet owners purchasing insurance are dog owners. So that's almost 80% of the market today. It's highly variable by pet breed. I've got a Great Dane mix, so her insurance can be twice that national average. It's also dependent on the geography. If you are in a city where veterinary costs may be higher because real estate costs are higher, that could be one variable that affects your insurance costs.
Sure, that makes sense. And anybody who's gotten in a vet bill that where there's something wrong in the thousands of dollars, $500 seems doable if it can fit into your budget. But you can go lower than that too, can't you?
You can. It's highly customizable. There really is a plan out there for everybody. The main levers that you can choose from are deductible, reimbursement rate, and annual limit. And I recommend pet owners start with a more expensive product, which means a lower deductible, higher annual limit, because ultimately, if you want to downgrade the coverage to make it a little less expensive, you can do that over time. It's a lot easier to reduce coverage over time than it is to increase coverage over time, because there's a concept of waiting periods for pet insurance, where if you buy pet insurance today, typically it takes 2 weeks for the coverage to begin. And if you increase coverage at a later date, then that may start a new waiting period, meaning anything your pet may have encountered in the past could be considered pre-existing. Whereas if you downgrade coverage to lower the cost of the insurance over time, it will not start a new waiting period typically. So again, it's a lot easier to reduce that coverage if you need to you know, better impact your wallet.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Thank you for explaining that. Now, another thing is how do you pay for it? So does the insurance reimburse the vet like we do with our health insurance, or how does that work?
There are some options that actually pay the vet directly. More commonly, you'll pay for the procedure up front, and then you'll be reimbursed in a matter of a week or two is most common. And so that means that, you know, when you purchase the insurance, if you come down with that unforeseen emergency, hopefully it never happens to you, but insurance can be that means to quickly get reimbursed or to pay off that credit card bill. Okay. There are also solutions that are complementary with pet insurance. That would be like a care credit or a scratch pay, which can be a financial solution to help, you know, you in that 2 week period or so if you need that support.
Okay. Now, I learned from your site that there are basically three types of coverage that you can get on these plans. Why don't you tell us a little bit about each one of them?
Yeah. So the core, when I talk about pet insurance in general, and when most people talk about pet insurance, they're talking about accidents and illnesses. A broken bone, sickness, something like that, you know, that sort of emergency that your pet could come down with. There are also wellness memberships that a veterinarian can provide, or that an insurance company can offer as an add-on that will cover things like, you know, a spay and neuter up to a certain amount, flea tick prevention, heartworm prevention, vaccines, microchipping even. And sometimes pet owners get a lot of value if, you know, you are buying wellness insurance right after adoption when you need a lot of those things. If your pet has already had a spay and neuter, you know, or has already been microchipped, then maybe you realize a little less value from that product over time. And then separately from that, there are sort of emergency coverage options. So let's say you're dealing with a pre-existing condition, you're going to the vet today, you're in the waiting room, what do you do to cover the cost of care for your loved one? Well, that's where you could choose one of these financing products that, you know, you can essentially select and enroll in a matter of minutes.
Okay. We do have a caller. Angela in Baraboo has a question for you. Go ahead, Angela.
Hi. I was calling because I was wondering if you could maybe, I live in the country and we have horses. So is there pet insurance available for horse owners? And if so, could you give me the ballpark number maybe for what it would
cost? I'll caveat this by saying I'm not a horse insurance expert, but there are some providers that do offer horse insurance. I believe Crum & Forster is one of the only ones that I know of that offers a similar pet insurance-like product for horses. But sometimes that could be seen as a specialized product through an insurance company.
I would imagine that would be have pretty high premiums too, wouldn't it?
I think the products that I've seen through Crum & Forster are relatively inexpensive.
Oh, okay.
For sort of the accidents and emergencies. You know, if you wanted liability insurance or some sort of breeding insurance or that sort of thing, that's the sort of thing that pet insurance will not cover.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much, Angela. If you've got a question, give us a call. Lines are open, 800-642-1234. If you have insurance, I'd love to hear what you thought about it when you actually had to use it. That would be great to hear an example. Do you have any for us besides your own, Woody?
We see really commonly in cats linear object ingestions. So a cat will eat a string or something like that, and that can cost thousands of dollars to treat ultimately because it requires surgery many times. And then, you know, my own animals have had CCL tears, which is a knee injury. And typically, you know, there's over a 50% chance of the second knee going down if the first one has required surgery. And those are the sort of, you know, bank buster moments in terms of $5,000 to $6,000 charges. And ultimately, you know, most pet owners really want to care for their animal and provide them the best care possible. And it's a really difficult moment, as you can imagine, for a pet owner, as well as a veterinarian who wants to treat the animal, when financial conversations need to be had about how do you cover those moments.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why veterinarians around the country are using services like Policy Advisor to ultimately help their clients navigate that very delicate conversation and find an option that will allow them to care for those pets in that moment of need.
And is there a deductible on these policies?
There is. Usually between around $250 to $500 is most commonly chosen. You can reduce that next to $0 if you wanted by some providers, which is a little bit more expensive, but certainly then you just get 70, 80 to 90% of the full cost covered without having to pay your deductible. So, this gets back to customizing your options, which means you can customize the deductible, you can customize the reimbursement rate, and you can customize the annual limit to find a product that's best fit for you. And something that we do at Policy Advisor is help you navigate that and show you what is most common and what is recommended for your situation.
Okay. We have a call from Jim in Stevens Point. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I have had a lot of dogs in my life and never had pet insurance, but I rescued a Karen Terrier about 5 years ago, and she just seemed to get into trouble all the time, whether it was eating a colander of grapes or chocolate or something. So I decided to get pet insurance, and that year she got herself caught up in some shrub, and it punctured her side, which required me to take her to Appleton for emergency surgery and all kinds of stuff. So it really paid off, and I just took a chance on it again because she seemed troublesome.
Well, you were wise, Jim, to recognize that.
Thank you for sharing that story. And I'm sorry you went through that episode. I hope your dogs are doing really well right now. And, you know, something you mentioned is that you've had several, maybe you have several dogs now, but you have in the past. And I just want to highlight, you know, one of the ways to save money with pet insurance is if you enroll your pets in a single provider for multiple animals, you can see up to 10% discounts on the insurance policy for subsequent enrollments.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So that's good. So don't feel that because you have multiple animals that maybe it's not affordable. There is a break.
Yeah, and we could talk for quite a bit of time on sort of how to save money and tools of the trade. One of the ones that I think is really important, particularly if you have multiple pets, if you're like me, you probably have a mixed breed animal. Over 60% of pet parents do. And a lot of people don't realize that it's up to you to make the decision as to how to enroll your animal. And the veterinarian may designate your animal a certain breed. But ultimately, you know, if you've got a golden doodle, it could be a golden retriever. It could be a poodle mix. It could be a generic mixed breed dog. There are over 500 different breeds of dog. And you're not going to have to take a DNA test for your animal to determine how to enroll it. But that one decision alone, I do want to highlight, can have up to a 40% impact on price. And a lot of pet owners don't realize sort of how to maneuver or navigate that selection. And one of the things that we look at is how to enroll your pet to ultimately save money in a compliant way with the insurance company. So, you know, particularly if you have a mixed breed animal, if you have multiple pets, that's one thing I would spend some time looking at.
Okay, so give us an example. We've got a little time here. You can give us an example of some tips for that.
Yeah, so I've got a Rhodesian Ridgeback mix with Great Dane. And actually, by enrolling her as a large breed generic mix, that's one of the ways I save over 25% on my insurance. I don't know sort of what percentage of her is one breed or the other. And I made the decision just to enroll her as a generic large breed mixed dog. But certainly, you know, when the insurance company looks at those different breeds, you know, for a Great Dane, maybe the average life expectancy is around 7 years. For a Rhodesian Ridgeback, it can be quite a bit longer. And so that changes the underwriting process, which is how they assign a price for the product. And there are, you know, thousands of different combinations of breeds. And so to make the price sort of work for you, you know, you need to really be looking at, well, what are my options? How can I enroll my pet? And ultimately, how does this impact price? Because 30 to 40% savings today can translate to, you know, on a compounding basis, thousands of dollars by the end of the pet's life. And we've looked at this for a variety of different pet breeds in more expensive zip codes. And this can translate into tens of thousands of dollars in difference between insurance policies, you know, over your pet's typical lifespan.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, the insurance companies are fine with that because they offer that option. So like large breed, medium breed, small breed, is that basically how that works?
Yeah, you could enroll your pet as a small generic mix, a medium generic mix, a large breed generic mix, or, you know, a Rhodesian Ridgeback mix, okay, like me, or a Golden Retriever mix. I mean, there are breed specific mix types. So, you know, this is one of the reasons why pet insurance can be a little confusing to navigate, is because you do have so many options. And the typical pet owner may not realize or understand how the different options apply to them. It's just really important that you do, you know, tell the truth and ultimately enroll your pet in the best way possible that also is closely aligned with the medical notes of your veterinarian. But within those confines, it's important to be thinking about these different variables and how they impact you directly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how do you get paid, Woody?
Yeah, I love talking about this because, you know, ultimately when I started the company, I wanted to make sure that we were seen as an objective voice in the industry. And so as a licensed insurance company, we take a commission directly from the insurance providers, which means that we're free to use for pet owners. We're free to use for veterinarians, for them to send their clients to. And ultimately, we've standardized those rates. So when we make a recommendation, we really mean it. We're not going to get paid more to recommend one product over another. And we only get paid if somebody not only finds the right policy, but holds on to that policy over time. So we are financially motivated to find a product that a pet owner is going to stick with over time, which means we've seen that retention of insurance policies through our platform has been higher than industry average, which is a great sign to us that we're headed the right direction. And the larger we scale, the more likely we are to influence the insurance industry to come out with the best products for pet owners and ultimately to care for them in the best ways possible.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. What will people find on your website? And give us the address, too.
Sure. The address is pawlicy.com. Pet owners can navigate their different insurance options and enroll in one that works for them. They can also talk to our customer support agents to help them navigate the nuanced questions that they may have. We also have a treasure trove of resources for pet owners to review, from growth charts for different pet breeds to different health conditions that you can read about. And then veterinarians too. We work really closely with veterinarians around the country. We're the American Animal Hospital Association recommended pet insurance option. And we have a number of resources for veterinary offices to support their clients. So veterinarians can go directly onto our site, select the tab for veterinarians, and get in touch with us about how we can support their clinics.
I was on it last night, and there really are a lot of resources and a lot of information that you can take a look at. So when we wind up here, what advice do you have for someone who's considering insurance but it's not quite sure yet?
I'd really encourage you to navigate your options. You have nothing to lose from exploring. And, you know, we hear all the time from pet owners that they pay out of pocket for their pet's care until that emergency that they didn't expect. And that's really what, you know, the value of insurance is to protect against the unexpected. And, you know, we really want to avoid, particularly, you know, over the holiday season when there are more objects that pets can ingest and things that can happen, that as many pets as possible are protected, because ultimately, the goal at the end of the day is to just provide the best life for the pets possible and the best care possible. And insurance is one great way to do that. It's certainly not the only way, and it isn't best for everybody necessarily, but it is a really great option for the majority of pet owners in America.
Well, very well said, Woody. Thank you very much. And we really appreciate you taking the time to explain this and for doing the site, because I'm sure it helps a lot of pet owners feel a little bit better about getting insurance. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay. We've been talking with Woody Mawini. He is co-founder and CEO of Policy, PAWLICY Advisor, an online pet insurance marketplace. And up next, we've got a couple of vets here from the UW Vet School to answer your pet care questions. So stick around. Cancer is a leading cause of death in dogs and cats, but there is research being done to help treat it and maybe prevent it. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is The Larry Mueller Show. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. We're joined by Dr. Maria Verbigi. She's a clinical instructor of primary care at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Also with us is Dr. Amy Nicholson. She's a clinical assistant professor of primary care at the the UW-Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. And both doctors are also practicing veterinarians, and they see patients through UW Veterinary Care's primary care service. The vets are here to answer your question about your pet's health. What do you want to know about cancer in animals? Or maybe you're curious about which human leftovers you should or shouldn't give your dog this week. Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234 or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Well, Dr. Amy, Dr. Maria, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Excited to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to have you back. So November is Pet Cancer Awareness Month. Are cats and dogs more likely to, are some cats and dogs more likely to get cancer than others?
Well, we definitely see a lot of similarities between cancer in our pets and cancer in people. We share an environment together, and so we definitely see more cancer in older pets. And so one of the reasons why we see more cancer now than we used to is that pets are living such longer lives, and so so we have more older animals, and so we'll see cancer in them. So it's a good time to just kind of think about being aware of that in your pets and making sure that your pets are being seen regularly by your veterinarian so we can detect things early.
Okay, that makes sense. It's kind of like with humans, right? What types of cancers are most common?
So oftentimes lymphomas, skin tumors like mast cell tumors, sometimes benign tumors like little fatty masses or lipomas are normal developments with age. And so it's not atypical for some older dogs to get kind of lumpy or bumpy as they get older. But certainly we like to kind of take a look at them during their yearly physical, poke a little needle in there just to make sure there's nothing concerning or signs of malignancy.
Okay. So what are some of the signs of cancers that pet owners can look for, Dr. Maria?
So they can definitely look for lumps and bumps on their pets. Those are going to be the ones that we most commonly will see externally. More concerning stuff is just changes in their general overall health. And so if we're seeing that they are, you know, much more lethargic than usual, if their appetites are dropping, or if they're just generally showing other signs of systemic illness, that can obviously be evidence of a lot of different things. But, you know, certainly cancers can fall into that category.
What can we do to prevent cancer in our pets, Dr. Amy?
If we knew that, we would have a lot of money. So there's no real good way to prevent cancer. Certainly there's some things that we know can help treat cancer earlier, like Dr. Verbrugge was saying. So making sure that they're having yearly examinations, screening, and especially if they're a particular breed that's more prone to cancer, sometimes we'll do some more routine or advanced screening to kind of catch it early. And that's about all, unless you know of anything else that can help prevent cancer. But
well, they're certainly looking into more things. You know, I think some of the risk factors for cancer are probably, again, similar between pets and people. And there's a lot of ongoing research. I think we know a lot more about the risk factors in people. There's a lot of ongoing research with you know, looking into things that can prevent cancer. Right now, there's a very interesting study happening at the vet school for a vaccine against cancer. Both of my dogs are enrolled in that study, and it's a 5-year study where they've either gotten a vaccine or a placebo, and then they're being you know, checked a couple times a year, monitored to see if they will develop cancers. Stay tuned. I think we'll hope to know a lot more, you know, as the science advances.
That's good to hear, because I know that was kind of brought up when it started to try to get people here on the show to be in the study. So we definitely want to hear how it's going. So we'll look forward to hearing that. What do you do if a pet is diagnosed with cancer? What are their options? What kind of treatments are there?
It depends so much on the type of cancer that they have, and it can range from kind of monitoring if it's something that's non-malignant or not likely to grow or change, to chemotherapy or surgical removal, to radiation therapy. Some other newer modalities such as gene therapies are coming out. So it really, really depends on the type of cancer and the level of involvement and invasiveness that an owner and a dog or cat wants to go through.
Okay. Well, we do have a caller. Katie in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Great. What's your question?
My daughter has a cockapoo, 13-year-old cockapoo named Chester. And before Halloween, he started limping in his front, one of his front legs. I think it was his front right. His health has progressed downhill significantly since then. And she has been in to see the doc. There have been x-rays, there have been blood work. At first, he was just treated for pain. He doesn't eat anymore. He doesn't want to eat unless, you know, every once in a while she'll hand feed him something special and he'll eat that. He's drinking a lot. He's defecating and he's peeing. But he's not doing well. And he's, right now they seem to have eliminated cancer, and they're treating him for Lyme disease, even though he tested negative, because he does have a fever, a low-grade fever. He's lethargic. I mean, he's just not doing well. And I'm wondering if there's any other avenues we should be exploring. I don't know.
All right. Thanks, Katie. You guys have an answer for her?
It sounds like maybe you're a little bit skeptical about the diagnosis. I think that things to consider. It's always valuable to get a second opinion if you're feeling like either, unsure about the diagnosis, or maybe you're just not really connecting, feeling comfortable with the doctor that your pet is seeing. And it may end up, once you get a second opinion, sometimes it's very similar, but sometimes they might have some different ideas, some other tests that we can do, some other treatments that we can try. Or if it's the same, at least you're getting confirmation that, like, okay, I feel better, that we're not missing something. So I think that might be a route to go. And then ultimately, if you feel like, things aren't working and your dog's quality of life is not doing well, check back in with your regular vet. See if they are, have other suggestions for what to do. Or honestly, if you feel like this isn't going well and you don't want to watch your dog continue to decline, it may be good to have a conversation around, quality of life and euthanasia, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you, Katie, for that question. Let's go to Sue in Eau Claire. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a nurse practitioner, and I've worked a little bit outside the mainstream system. There's a lab test through Great Plains Labs, who are CLIA certified, so they're a certified lab company. The lab test looks for toxins in the urine of human beings. What we know about organophosphates, like what's in products like Roundup and other products like that, is that they can cause cancer. And I think about several of our dogs have had cancer. Everywhere we walk in our neighborhood, the neighbors have some kind of lawn care company spraying organophosphates on the grass. So I just wish there was another way that we could strengthen the effort to get rid of products like Roundup, because I truly believe that they're harming our pets.
Okay. Have you had any experience, either of you, with this?
Not in particularly with Roundup, but I know that there is an ongoing study at UW looking at environmental risk factors for certain forms of cancer, with the same idea of recognizing that we're not in a bubble and there have been associations with environmental contaminants and the development of cancer in humans. And so seeing how that parallels animals to see if we can use some One Health perspectives and translational research to treat both. So okay, there is some ongoing research there.
Okay. And that's what we need. We need some research and some facts to work
yes,
with, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Sue, very much for that call. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email. That's ideas@wpr.org. And we did get a listener to email us. Their cat got out last week. How long can a cat survive outside?
Oh my goodness. That's a good question. I'm sure that's really scary.
Yes.
It depends on the environment and it depends on the cat. So, you know, it can be pretty scary world out there with, you know, neighborhood dogs and raccoons and cars and any kind of source of trauma, infectious disease and things like that. And at the same time, you know, cats are tough little creatures. And they also, you know, there are a lot of cats that that manage to live their whole lives outside, and they can kind of live to a ripe old age, especially if there's like a food source available and things like that. So, you know, lots of neighborhood flyers and, you know, hopefully your cat is microchipped and has a tag. Those are two of the things that we know are effective in bringing our pets home when they go missing. So hopefully the kitty has that. And hang in there. Keep looking.
Yeah, I know Larry lost his cat not too long ago and jumped out of the screen, you know, pushed the screen open, and he was so upset. But it was like about a week, and he came back, and someone saw it, you know, and he was just fine. So, you know, good luck, and hopefully the kitty will come back. So, yes. Yeah. Let's go back to the phone. Anita in Beloit. Hi, Anita.
Hi. My dog has been... He was diagnosed with bladder cancer. He's a stray, and he came in on a shipment of strays and was picked up by a rescue group. He was in pretty bad shape and wound up to have his surgery for bloat. He lost his spleen. He had Giardia, everything possibly going on. After I'd had him for about a month, he was out in the yard, and he looked like a blocked cat. And I took him into the vet. He had what looked like a very severe bladder infection. They x-rayed him. It didn't show any obvious tumors or anything. Treated it for a while, and then they suggested to do a dedicated test for bladder cancer, for which he tested positive. So they suggested an ultrasound. The ultrasound didn't show any tumors. That was about 2 weeks ago. And I'm just wondering if I'm out of the woods.
Yeah, that's such a hard question. And I'm really sorry to hear about the difficult past your little fella has had. That's a lot for anybody and for you in particular. It's really hard. That test that you're talking about, there is a test that looks for a genetic mutation that is associated with a majority of bladder cancers. It's called a BRAF test. And any test can have false positives and false negative results. The concern would be that there's also false negative and false positive results with the ultrasound, since it's limited in how sensitive it can detect sizes of masses in the bladder, and it can't get into the urethra that empties the bladder into the penis or the external genitalia. And so there is some limitations in both of those tests. And so I think if you're concerned, especially if he was showing signs, then it may be worth considering some additional imaging to better find those kind of gaps in visibility that are that can be detected with something like a CT scan instead of an ultrasound. And so that's something that you could talk to your veterinarian about and kind of say, why are we getting these mixed messages? Is there something that we can do to better identify and clarify what's going on? Okay. Thank you so much, Anita, and good luck. Yeah. And thank you for adopting. Yes. That's wonderful. We're talking with Dr. Maria Verbrugge and Dr. Amy Nicholson from the UW-Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Our producer today is Clara Neipert, and on the board is Trina LaSouza. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to take more of your pet care questions.